Welcome to One Symphony, a podcast that explores classical music's relevance in our modern lives. I'm conductor Devin Patrick Hughes, and I'm here to share with you stories and conversations with musicians, composers, and artistic entrepreneurs that aim to unite us into one symphonic world. Ralph Patrick is a former pastor, dementia consultant, and Alzheimer's Association collaborator. His mother died of Alzheimer's in 2012. Her diagnosis in 2001 led him to join the Colorado chapter of the Alzheimer's Association. He has presented hundreds of education classes as well as providing consulting services for both caregivers and those living with dementia, and has been a collaborator and presenter with Boulder Symphony in creating a sensory-friendly concert series. Through his work, Ralph has reached and improved the lives of thousands in Colorado and beyond. Ralph, thank you so much for joining me on One Symphony today. I would love to ask you about your earliest experiences with music and how that seeded your work with the Alzheimer's Foundation.
Hey, Devin, it's a pleasure. Thanks so much for having me. My earliest experience with music as it's connected with dementia was way back in the mid-1990s. And I still remember the person's name. Her name was Lempi. And I actually was a pastor. And I would go to visit Lempi, and she was in what I understand now to be the mid stages of dementia, maybe a little bit more advanced. But I would go to see her and she wouldn't know who I was. She'd ask me repeatedly who I was. She had a really difficult time tracking our conversation. And as a young pastor, I was somewhat frustrated. But I would then move into this little service, so to speak, a little religious service with her. And I would sing a hymn or two, familiar hymns like Amazing Grace or How Great Thou Art. And as soon as we started to do that, it was as if the clouds would clear for her. She would be very coherent, engaged, and present, and she was able to follow, and she was tracking. We would go through our little religious service, and when we finished, the clouds would descend again, and she would go back into her confused state, and my time with her would be over. But that was when I first realized there was something much deeper going on with this whole world of dementia, and also, for your purposes, the connection between music and dementia, and how that really helps to trigger old memories and make connections and really do some magical things for people.
Can you talk about how music, whether it be live or recorded, can be used on maybe a larger scale or on a community-wide level, which is maybe not happening? Where are those gaps?
Yeah, so two parts to that question. One is really the recorded music. There's a pretty familiar program that's called Alive Inside, in which there was recorded music, and the people that ran the program would take headphones and place them on the person with dementia and play music that would have resonated with them. And you can watch and see the response. As the title says, the way they become alive inside. And that's simply recorded music that's played through headphones for the individual. Now, the thing with dementia is that it's really important for a person with dementia to be present with another person. It's much harder for them to track when whatever it is they're engaging with is virtual. We learned that during COVID. We may have learned it before, but COVID provided proof for that because people with dementia have a very difficult time with that virtual world that we all live in. It's much more beneficial for a person living with dementia to have personal contact and to be engaged. And there's a lot of reasons for that. One is it's stimulating more senses. Even though vision can be affected and is with dementia, nonetheless, they still retain that ability to visualize and to see unless they're in the very advanced stages. They are able to engage with touch. And furthermore, you could speak much better to this than I could, but the very reverberation and the resonation in a room, something that the person with dementia picks up on. People with dementia are far more sensitive to energy and to the more nuanced forms of communication and signals that they receive. And so when it's live, it's much, much better. The presentation that you did with the Symphony, Devin, that I was at, was a great example of that, because you were able to not just play or perform music as the symphony, but you were able to engage with people who had dementia. And it makes all the difference.
You mentioned Alive Inside, which a program I believe was about 10 years ago. Can you talk about any kind of progress that's been made or any kind of major changes at a more regional or more national level that you're aware of that organizations can possibly piggyback off of?
From my experience working with the Alzheimer's Association, the most success we had was not only engaging with the symphony, but also with music therapists. We did programs because of the benefit of being in person. We actually had volunteers who were music therapists who would meet with people living with dementia. They would host a regular event and they would play music, they would sing music, they would give the individuals musical instruments, and they would have that personal contact. Certainly, there's been advances in the technology of recorded music, but I'm convinced the most beneficial means for engaging someone with dementia musically or in other ways is personally and interpersonally. And so what I've seen as far as advances go is the utilization of music therapy and music therapists for people living with dementia. And as I mentioned, what you have recognized and begun to utilize with the Boulder Symphony of already established groups or organizations, symphonies, choirs, what have you, implementing means by which to intentionally become more dementia friendly. And I just thought of one other thing, and that is the choir. The dementia choirs have become much more popular. It's so fascinating to watch people with dementia who have a very difficult time speaking due to aphasia, see them join a choir and begin to sing, and those familiar songs and those familiar lyrics come back to them. And there have been numerous reports and studies done tracking that element.
I would agree. And in my experiences with you and with obviously local organizations, goes really well in hand with what I believe in terms of music being this universal language that can connect us through where language can't. But taking that to the next level, instead of just performing the music, what I've found in the concerts that I've been involved in is, like you said, if we can bring back popular music from the 50s or the 40s or the 60s and play them however we want with whatever instrument. But if we can engage the audience and actually get them to sing, those seem to be some of the most successful concerts. I would ask you, in terms of orchestras out there or ensembles or just any musical groups in general, if somebody, maybe an executive director, a conductor, a board member, wants to engage in some of these programs, what is step one? What is step two? What are the attributes and the skills that that organization may need if somebody wants to get one of these programs going?
I think step one is to get educated about dementia and to learn some of the dynamics. Dementia is a broad term, and it covers an awful lot of types of cognitive decline. It's very general, and the way this disease affects people is very individual and very unique to each person. However, that being said, there are some principles that one can be aware of. For example, the type of concert or musical performance that you might arrange for would be different if you had a group of people who were in the early stages of dementia versus those who were in the more advanced stages. And you'd want to tailor it to that specific demographic of those living with dementia. Education is the first step. The second step, I think, is reaching out to a local organization that would be interested in partnering or collaborating. In Boulder, it might be the Boulder Dementia Friendly Group or the Boulder County Area Agency on Aging. It could be an AgeWell Center. It might be some of the care communities, reaching out and tapping those resources, not only to help provide further support and possible education, but also to help reach into the community. Because here's the unfortunate thing, is that we associate dementia with people who are living in care communities or memory care units. Many, if not most of the people who are living with dementia are still living at home. Reaching the caregivers and the people with dementia who are in their homes is absolutely essential. So I would say that would be the next step after education, is partnering or collaborating with other local agencies who share the same interest and passion. You do have those in Boulder. In Denver, the Denver Public Library is doing amazing things with people who have dementia. So that would be the second thing. And the third thing is being willing to tailor the program specifically for that demographic. You did a brilliant job of it because you chose such appropriate pieces and you kept them short, relatively speaking, and you tailored those musical choices that you made specifically to the people with dementia and their caregivers. So I think that's the third step, is to really be aware of the special and unique needs that people with dementia have.
Can you talk about some of the differences that you, as someone who's in this world and has been in the Alzheimer's Association, would expect to see in programming between a more early onset or a later stage in terms of repertoire, in terms of the length of music, or maybe even in terms of what that instrumentation or that vocal ensemble might be consisting of?
In the early stages, the person has limited cognitive deficits, so they're going to be able to engage in the way most normal concert goers would. For example, they'd be able to handle a longer performance, more challenging pieces, more brash, bassous. I don't know, I'm not in your world. Something that's more vibrant and louder and bigger. They could handle all of that. And it could be in a much bigger setting, because in the early stages, the person with dementia isn't quite as anxious being around larger crowds. It's the most important thing across the spectrum, is choosing selections that are familiar. So you could still do that in your normal way of doing the program or presenting the program, but really making sure that these are musical selections that the people are going to recognize. And I would still suggest, even in the early stages, that you include the engagement piece. This is what we always did with our early stage programs, no matter who it was that was doing the presentation. We always had a part where you could teach or you could ask questions about what was heard. It's what you did in your performance, which was brilliant, where you'd play a piece and then you'd have a pause and you would talk through that piece, because that's stimulating the brain and that's what they need. So there's great stimulation being with other people. There's great cognitive stimulation listening to this music. But another piece of the cognitive stimulation is working through what it is that they heard and talking through that and engaging on that level. So that's what you could do in the early stages. But then as you go more advanced, the person's world with dementia is shrinking. So I would use that metaphor for your musical performance. So you're going to shrink it down. You're going to have less people performing. It's not going to be as loud. The pieces you choose are going to be more soothing. Again, I don't know your world, but instead of having some piece that has a lot of brass in it, you're probably going to focus more on the violins and the cellos and that kind of thing. So the point there is to have it be more comforting. And to, again, be very aware that it's really essential for it to be the most familiar musical selections possible that are appropriate for that group, for that age range, or that generation, that demographic. And you'd want to keep it to a smaller gathering, because as the person advances through dementia, large gatherings become very intimidating and they're very uncomfortable with it. Ideally, and I don't know how you do this as performers, but ideally you wouldn't want a group of more than 20 people maybe with advanced dementia or even mid-stage dementia, 20, 25, 30 people, because too much activity, too much stimulation, overstimulation is going to negatively affect the person with dementia. Most of the people with advanced dementia are going to be, maybe not most, but many are going to be in care communities or memory care units. So I'd really distinguish between early and middle stage. What I just described is appropriate for those in the middle stages of dementia. The advanced stages, that's where you're going to have to be more mobile. That's where you take the show on the road. That's where you start visiting the care communities and the memory care units and what have you, because they're not going to really be ambulatory and able to get out as easily. It's going to be much more difficult for both caregivers and those who are providing other forms of care for them to get them into a venue that's not in their care community.
A lot of times when people hear music that they recognize, it's a full band. And that's the nice thing about the string quartet. We have used larger groups before, but it's come down to the string quartet because the string quartet can essentially support all the harmonies of the piece. So somebody could hear everything that's going on in that piece of music. So can you talk about if there's any difference between that in terms of recognition or its ability to bring out the inner light from that person? In regards to just one line, so they might just hear the melody. So you might not have the whole harmonic spectrum of the song versus a larger group like a string quartet, which can actually represent all different parts and harmonies of the song. Is there any difference in terms of someone with later stage dementia to have the recognition in that regard?
I don't know for sure, but I think having those four pieces as opposed to just a melody line provides more cognitive stimulation. That would be my hunch. And as I mentioned, and I'm thinking of not long ago, I went in to visit someone in a memory care unit, and there was someone playing the piano. And that was really nice of them to play the piano, but it was just one person. And they were really playing quite loudly. Even for me, it was a little bit jarring. And I don't know why they were doing that. We assume maybe people with dementia can't hear, and sometimes they can't. But I thought to myself, this is very well intentioned. And the piece was also unfamiliar. I'm not sure what the piece was. It was unfamiliar to me. Even though it was music, it really wasn't hitting the target for a couple of reasons. It was overly stimulating because it was so loud, and it was an unfamiliar piece. If you were to take that and compare it to bringing in a string quartet that was much more subtle, and you had the different harmonies going, as I'm describing it, I'm getting goosebumps myself. That's going to provide the person with dementia a much more cognitive and emotional and sensory rich experience. That's what you're going for, is the stimulation of the senses. That's what it comes down to. And ideally, you're going to try to stimulate as many of those senses as possible. But having those different harmony or those different lines that you were describing, that's what it's doing. It's impacting the different parts of the brain that are receiving that music, that stimulation. The more of that you can do, the healthier it is for the person, the more beneficial it is, and the better they're going to respond.
So this is actually a way to almost create a little bit of longevity to make the person more present. It's not just something that temporarily was a salve and then you take the music away and then they revert. Can you talk about that therapeutic longer term benefit and possible improvements that people can see?
Two things come to mind. First of all, my mom had dementia, and in the advanced stages, even when she didn't know who people were, except for one of her sisters, she could still be wheeled over to a piano and plunk out pieces on the piano, which was incredible. So that tells you something about how the mind works when it comes to music. But secondly, I would compare it to physical exercise. We know that when you're out running or lifting weights or what have you, you're burning calories and you're building muscle and all that. But we also know that continues to benefit the body. It's not like it stops as soon as you're done exercising. Those calories continue to be burned and those muscles rebuild and so on and so forth. Well, the same is true for the brain. If you think of the brain as a muscle, that's what the music's doing. The music is providing that exercise cognitively for the brain. And even when it's done, the brain is going to continue to utilize that and to make use of it. And it's not like the person is going to have a reversal of dementia, but to some extent, the brain is going to be refreshed and regenerated and rejuvenated after that. I don't have studies to quote, but I know that for people with dementia, music has the same effect that it has for us. We hear something, it changes our mood and it affects our emotion. It's not like when the song or the performance is over that, oh, okay, now we're back to our normal self. That lingers and that lasts for hours or days, maybe. Same thing with cognition, same thing for the person with dementia.
In my opinion, the greatest orchestras in America at all different levels, from regional to the New York Philharmonic, they all view themselves as community-based. They're all interested in being something that is there, not just to create musical performances, right? But they're there to fill in gaps that are created for whatever societal reasons. Could you talk about the importance of connecting with memory care facilities or various Alzheimer's associations in different communities, if you think that should be a role of an orchestra, why you think they should do that?
Yeah, that's a great question. Here's one of the unfortunate elements of people with dementia due to not only oftentimes the physiology of the brain changes that are occurring, but also due to the stigma associated with the disease, begin to withdraw from community, from organizations, from friends, so on and so forth. Caregivers oftentimes accompany them on that journey of isolation. It's essential for communities to be able to reach out and reach in to those populations that are the most isolated. People with dementia and caregivers are oftentimes not the ones who are going to initiate that contact, unless they're really avid music aficionados or enthusiasts. They're most likely not going to turn on the television and watch the New York Philharmonic or some ballet performance. But if they are invited to and aware of an event that's designed especially and specifically for them in their community, they are much more likely to respond positively. That's going to have the benefit of bringing them out of that isolation and getting them re-engaged in that community, which can provide not only the service of music and that cognitive stimulation, but also the other resources that are so essential for those on the dementia journey. This is the unfortunate truth of what's happening, is that dementia is not a sexy disease. It's not like childhood leukemia. And so oftentimes that population is overlooked. And yet it's a significant population. It's a significant demographic. I'm not saying this just because of this interview. It's because of what I've experienced personally as well as professionally. I think music and the arts in general are the most effective way to break in and to break through that very secluded, dark, depressing world of dementia. And you're really able to shine light on these people and for these people in a way that not many other things can. Maybe a walk in nature, that has a similar effect. But it's the arts that are really able to reach into the soul of the person. And that's what's oftentimes ignored. Yes, we've talked a lot about the benefit of music for cognition, but I believe, and this I learned from that first encounter that I described, I believe that a person, their true self and their deeper self, is not confined to their cognition, that it goes much deeper. And when I teach, I talk about somatic memory, which is that memory that is buried deep within us. I compare it to riding a bike. A person never forgets how to ride a bike. That's somatic memory. You don't have to think about how to ride a bike. You don't have to think about how to play an instrument. If you learned to play an instrument when you were young, that's never going to go away. You might not be as good at it. I played the trumpet. I could pick up the trumpet today and I could play the trumpet. That's somatic memory. And so that's the focus, or in my opinion, that should be the focus. And it's what the arts and music especially is so effective at reaching. It's not just the cognition. It's that deeper inner self that resonates on a very instinctual, intuitive, basic level with music. And that's where we can most fully connect with the person who has dementia.
When you talk about prevention or prehabilitation or people in their 50s or 60s who are looking at the process of aging ahead of them, if they played an instrument or if they didn't play an instrument, do you think there's some long-term therapeutic benefits or medical advantages to starting an instrument? How does that differ from something like learning a new language, for instance, which we know gets harder and harder the older you get, but still possible?
Anything that a person can do that's new, that stimulates the brain, is beneficial. So learning a new language is beneficial. But here's the thing with music. Learning a new language stimulates part of the brain and is very specific and very focused in one area. But music is so multidimensional because, especially if you're playing the instrument, you've got the sound, you've got the movement, you've got the emotion that goes with it. I don't know about you, Devin, but I've learned languages and I don't get too emotional about it. Learning a new language does not affect my sensory perception and health the same way that music does. So music is like that because you're learning something new or you're continuing to stimulate your brain, but it's so much more than that. It's so much more than language or just taking up a new hobby or something like that, if that makes sense.
And I'll just put in a shameless plug for the Boulder Symphony Music Academy, which accepts students of all ages and levels and any music academy close to you. It's Ralph and Devin endorsed. Thank you, Ralph. It's been such a great time. You're so full of vibrancy and musicality and information having you on One Symphony. I trust that if anyone would like more information, they can, of course, always reach out to me at One Symphony, and we'll provide a way to get in contact with Ralph if you're looking at starting your own program as a musical ensemble.
I am not a musician, but I appreciate it. And I've seen the incredibly beneficial effects. And grateful to you and what you're doing and what the symphony is doing, as well as obviously other groups in the Colorado area. But also, there's just so much more that can be done. It's such an ignored population. So kudos to you, Devin. I was so impressed with that program that you did. Talking to you like this makes me wish that I was still engaged in a really meaningful daily way with people with dementia, but maybe someday again.
Well, thank you, Ralph. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Devin.
Thank you for joining us on One Symphony. Thanks to Ralph Patrick for sharing his expertise and stories. You can find more info at www.alz.org or www.bouldersymphony.org/outreach. Musical selections on this episode today include Bach's Air from Orchestral Suite No. 3 in D Major, performed by the Netherlands Bach Society, Tchaikovsky's Symphony No. 5, performed by the Munich Philharmonic, Mozart's Divertimento in D, the Salzburg Symphony No. 1, performed by Ton Koopman, conducting the Amsterdam Baroque Orchestra, The Syncopated Clock by Leroy Anderson, Shostakovich's Jazz Suite No. 2, performed by the Royal Concertgebouw Orchestra, Beethoven's Symphony No. 6, performed by the Berlin Philharmonic. You can always find more info at onesymphony.org, including a virtual tip jar if you'd like to support the show. Please feel free to rate, review, or share the show. Until next time, thank you for being a part of the music.